This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. And I am fired up for today because we got Alex McFadden. He is the mortgage pug.
And he brings the fire.
And he's the owner of Flow Mortgages. And today we've got him talking about how to navigate the mortgage market in 2024 for not only investors, but these
primarily
are
investors.
Primarily investors, but we cover so much ground here that I think this is super
applicable for everybody. If you're thinking about buying, refinancing, whatever it is in 2024, there are a number of takeaways here.
Huge. Yeah. But before we get to that, Matt.
Before we get to that, we have a new segment called the MLA Newswire Weekly Headline. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team.
I love this. And there's a couple of reasons I love this. But the big reason is that we talk about resale all the time on this program. And everyone, I think, that listens gets a really good insight into what's going on in the day-to-day of the properties already built in the resale market. But we only cover the pre-sale market in periodic shows, maybe quarterly, maybe once every half a year.
Yeah.
This is a way for us now to kind of have a quick segment on the pre-sale market every single episode. And we're getting MLA intel that no one else has access to. And these are the people that sell thousands of new construction homes.
This is what I love. Like, it's like, here's a little tidbit from the thousands of homes we're selling.
Yes.
You know, whether it's from the sales staff or whether it's from our intel team, it's just like unique information.
It's
so great that we get to share it with you.
Well, let's get into it.
All right. The headline this week, another flipping tax.
Yes.
DC budget includes new flipping tax at 20%. Adam, before you give your 2 cents, the flipping tax, as we discussed last week, is a 20% tax on the profit of any sale that happens within the first year after you own the property. And then it's a prorated amount after that first year to the second year. So you have to own a property for 2 years to not have to worry about the new BC flipping tax at the provincial level. But how does this relate to presale? That's a good question.
Yeah, it makes sense in the resale market. But when you start thinking about presale, so my first question is, when does the clock start for presale?
That was my question last week, and I didn't have any good answer. I just had questions. The clock, we now know, starts at the contract writing stage. So that means if you're buying a presale in 2024 and it completes in 2027, 2028, whenever it does, most concrete towers take more than 2 years, 2 to 4 years to complete. The flipping tax starts when you sign that contract, which means it's kind of a nothing burger in a lot of ways.
That surprised me because that's the thing. I mean, very few projects are going to be under 2 years, I think, in the lower.
And most people assign or try to sell that contract of purchase and sale near the end of a contract.
Right.
So you're holding it. The whole benefit of buying a presale as an investment is, for a low deposit, you're able to control that asset for a long amount of time prior to completion, right? So nobody's assigning in within 6 months.
So
generally,
like my thinking is, and I mean, I went through the government website and just had a look, but there's quite a few exemptions as well. So if you are in a pinch and you have to assign, sounds like they've got you covered if it's a significant life change.
Something like a divorce. Yeah, there's exceptions to that. It's worth pointing out as well, like in the, again, ripped from the headlines, the assignment is always, it's like the boogeyman. For everyone's reference, it's only usually about 2 to 5% of units at any typical presale project seek assignment from a third party, which basically means, of course, not to a family member.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean I don't see this as having a huge impact on pre-sales or the ability to assign in that regard.
No, I don't, and I don't think it actually dampens interest in the pre-sale market either for all these reasons. I mean, it seems like it's again not super applicable in most cases. So Adam, if you want more tips like this on new construction in the real estate market more generally, subscribe to the MLA newsletter, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. That's at mlacanada.com to subscribe.
Yeah. And last, Matt, before we get to our conversation with Alex McFadden, we've got a great listing today. And I should say the show is sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, our real estate company. Unit 6 at 2150 Southeast Marine Drive, a new listing that just went live this week. It's a townhouse, two bed, two bath, over 1,300 square feet with almost 250 square feet of sunny outdoor space, which is great, south facing. This is freehold, Southeast Vancouver.
A lot of them are leaseholds over there.
Yeah, so freehold, two parking, $849.9. Everybody at home.
That's missing middle. That's missing middle housing right there.
It's a great product for a young family. So anyways, this is perfect. So check it out on the podcast site, Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, where we are featuring our listings on the site. You can go check it out there at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And while you're there, Adam,
yes,
while you're at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com checking out all these amazing listings, hit sell with us because you get the most downloaded document we've ever produced. It's called the Sold Plan. You hit sell with us and it's an immediate download.
Yes, Matt. The Sold Plan, start on launch date. You get to pick your launch date and we give you instructions on how to get your home ready for market based on that launch date. It's usually about a 2 to 3 week time window, depending on how much decluttering. That's the only stipulation, but that's available over at our site. Click sell with us. You can download that plan. If you're in the industry and you want that plan, we have a lot of realtors that have downloaded that plan for themselves. Go check it out. Happy to share. And it's over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But without further ado, here's our conversation with the mortgage pug, Alex McFadden. The mortgage pug.
Enjoy. This is a good one.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Alec McFadden, as they say in the old country, with Flow Mortgages, The Mortgage Pug, amazing podcast.
You've got a lot going on. Past guest fan favorite.
Yeah, you've got so much going on. But today, of course, you're back by popular demand, second time in 2024. So welcome back and thanks for being on.
Thanks, man. We're going to make it a streak here. We're going to give three or four or five. And I just realized when you said that, I've got too many different things going on here, too many brands. I'm still getting over how you're pronouncing my last name. Last night. Thanks for having me back, buddies. I really appreciate the opportunity to come back. And last time was such a cool podcast. I had so many people actually reach out to me after that one there about just how different it was. So we'll try and make this one just as fun.
Awesome. Absolutely, yeah. So what we want to talk about today is the mortgage market, basically a how-to guide for real estate investing in 2024 when it comes to lending. Before we get there, and you've been on the show before fairly recently, but a quick tell us about yourself.
A quick tell us about myself. Well, the first thing is, if anybody didn't check out that last podcast, if you want the whole story, check out that last podcast because you've pretty much stripped everything out of me. So really quickly, I own a mortgage company called Flow Mortgage Co. We're based in Langley, BC, but truth of the matter is we work in multiple provinces and locations. We've recently closed on properties on Ontario, Alberta, Vancouver Island, the Okanagan. I mean, we're virtual, so we're all over the place. Got a team of seven 7, soon to be 8 as of next week. So really excited about that. And our primary focus on our team is helping people understand that debt is a tool instead of a debt. It's a good thing. And so whether it's somebody coming in to buy their first investment property or just trying to figure out how to restructure their situation, most people that come to us because they want to understand more than just the rate itself. And that's kind of what we focus on is here's how you use this for yourself. Outside of that, I spend my very little personal time with my pugs, as you know. I didn't bring them this time because of the poop incident last time.
The podcast studio appreciates that.
Yeah. So does my nose. Although I think it's desensitized at this time right now. That and I like to spend my time on the water as much as possible on the
right.
boat, which we got to get you guys out there sometime soon for sure.
Fantastic. Well, you know what? This is going off script a little bit, but you know, for somebody out there that heard, you know, we teach people that debt is a tool
mm-hmm.
and is like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Maybe just starting, like, what do you mean by that? And can you elaborate, I guess?
Definitely. The most common thing that I hear from people on a regular basis that come to me, especially even if they've worked with some bank or somewhere else, is I want to pay off this thing as quick as possible. I got to get rid of this mortgage, or I don't want to pay a lot of interest, or, you know, a variety of these different types of things, which is probably fair to suggest. But never do I typically hear someone come in. I shouldn't say never, because there are people who reach out to us that understand things and they've watched us for a long time on my podcast or Instagram. Most people just look at it as like, this is an expense that I have to pay and it's negative and I don't want to have it. We talked about money in our last conversation, right? And the way that I look at this is like, again, there's good debt and bad debt. We've talked about this in the past and we've heard about this before, but a good debt is accumulating an asset that grows in value, such as anything real estate related in Vancouver or in most cities outside of that. And a bad debt is buying, well, I didn't tell you this, but a boat, right? So unless it makes you really, really happy, then yeah, it's okay.
Right.
Debt can be a tool in the way that you structure it, the way that you look at it, but for most people, just how they think about it. So we like just... think about this for a second. You guys know this, but for a listener thinking about this, a bank will give you up to 95% of the value of a piece of real estate, in this case, other things, but or sometimes a business, but in an asset that will make money over time. So they will give you money to make money. So why wouldn't you want to borrow that and then try and find a way to use whatever cash you have, if you have any, to make more money with it? So you can duplicate that. Now, it's not as easy as 1, 2, 3 for most people. Like there's a process, which we're going to talk about here today, but it is a tool. And if it's used correctly, it works in your favor. And you're just basically exchanging interest, in this case to the bank, in exchange for an asset in a house that could potentially make you money or give you an opportunity to earn money or give you a place to call home where you don't have to pay, you know, higher rent month over month or year over year as your life goes on. You have stability, right? So it's a good thing.
One of the things that Adam and I have been doing lately, and it's just because we've been messing around with ChatGPT, is putting in if it's your own real estate or your dream real estate, and saying, okay, what is this worth if it appreciates at 3%? 15 years from now.
A calculator now will do that as well.
Well, but ChatGPT, I know, but ChatGPT is great because you can literally go, okay, now at 4%, 15 years from now, what's it worth? And it's a pretty fun exercise if you own the real estate.
I built a few different basic spreadsheets, but now that ChatGPT did that, I didn't need to spend, you know, my 400 hours of time building up.
It's actually really incredible for running numbers. That's where I've been using it the most. But like just even in real estate, like plugging in the numbers and just getting projections, it's a calculator. It's incredible.
Double check your numbers with ChatGPT.
Yeah.
I found it's you have to be really, really, really specific in what you're plugging
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. It depends which question. Alex, maybe pulling back a bit, and I want to get into more into good debt, bad debt, and talking about investor strategies in 2024. But first, maybe just how is the mortgage market right now?
If anybody would ask me that question right now, I use the word interesting. It's really interesting. I talked on the drive here to a real estate agent up in Quesnel. And he's been in the industry for 10 plus years. He's looking at buying investment properties, actually even in Mexico. And we're going through a mortgage process together right now. And even he repeated the same. He's like, man, I've done this a number of times. And it just seems like things are changing so quickly right now. Like it's hard to keep up, whether it be the rates, the different programs that are out there, the policies. He's like, man, I did this like 3 or 4 years ago and you know, things are going well, but it's just so fast. And the information is just, it just keeps changing. So my feedback to anyone is interesting. It's always interesting. I mean, when people look outside and they think mortgages, they think it's pretty bland, right? Like there's a bank and there's money and I don't want it
And there's a rate.
And there's a rate, right? Yeah. So, but what people aren't seeing is like, that's the tip of the iceberg where you see everything else underneath. But the difference right now is that the icebergs just keep shifting around and around and around. And there's all these different factors that are changing on a regular basis. So while not exciting from the outside looking in, if you really dig into it, it's thrilling. I mean, think about this, guys. Like, you've got people talking about mortgages, real estate, and economics that are like rock stars right now all over social media. And that was never the case 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it wasn't. And a lot of that is related data and information. The market, yeah, it's interesting. Every day is something new.
What, and when you're talking about key changes or changes that, you know, that people are looking at the tip, but they're not seeing, can you talk about what are some of those key changes? Like, what are some of the most interesting things going on in the mortgage market right now?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on which chunk that we're talking about here, right? Like, if it's specifically lenders. Okay, so interesting things that are going on in the lender world right now is that we've had new banks enter, let's say, the broker channel, such as BMO, where they just recently announced their earnings, which were dismal, not very positive. Mm-hmm. We've had certain lenders that during 2023, when the market was terrible, one of our number one lenders in Canada when it comes to mortgage markets is Big Red, Scotiabank. And they basically said, no, we don't want anything to do with this last year. And they've completely jumped back into the channel, changed some of their guidelines and said, hey, no, we want your business now. And they're competing like crazy, changing policies, allowing higher debt ratios, being more comfortable with different types of circumstances. Which again, from the outside might not seem interesting, but it's making deals happen now. Whereas, you know, 6 months ago, it was like, we don't want rentals. We don't want, we're not going to compete on, you know, anything, whether it be rates, terms, or anything else. We're not going to give anyone exceptions, you know, these types of things, right? Again, I would say that the biggest change has been the openness to the fact that the real estate market isn't crumbling. And now there's a high level back of positivity. But because of everything that's happening externally, there's just so much more regulation, you know, with the politics around real estate as a whole, you really have to cross your T's and dot your I's more than ever. I mean, and this is a good thing, in my opinion. Like, we've got mortgage fraud, which is probably a whole episode right there.
Sure.
Under the gun. I'm grateful for this, right? But I think that between AI, between what happened the last couple of years, seeing the market go through an insane up and down period, you know, with concerns publicly around delinquencies, I just think that what's going to happen now and going forward is you're just going to see more and more in segmentation of the markets and understanding that there are different lenders for a reason. And creativity is going to be the biggest thing going forward for anybody looking for anything outside of your cookie cutter mortgage.
What about, and I was just thinking your comments on the banks and Big Red, what about RBC and HSBC? How is that? Has that had any kind of an impact, or what do you suspect will happen there?
Well, for people who don't know about this, like RBC bought HSBC, which I know there was an attempt at blocking it. Didn't happen. RBC is actually acquiring HSBC in Canada. And I think that the implications right there is that, first of all, HSBC has been one of the most competitive rate lenders.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best quality and have the most unique guidelines. They were frustrating to work with, but the rates were crazy and they had a few unique programs. It's not a good thing, in my opinion. I think it's bad for competition in the marketplace. RBC comes and goes, you know, when they want business or don't want business, and they have a massive market share and they don't work in the broker channel. So they're kind of unique in that sense. So from a consumer perspective, I would look at this as a terrible thing. It's just like cell phones, right? Like when you only have one or two companies that are running the network, they less and less competition. So where that is, I guess, the biggest and the most negative impact is that you have an actual institutional bank saying, well, we're no longer going to offer these types of terms and rates. So it reduces that competition factor. And there's a lot of lenders out there who can't compete because they don't have the backbone, so to speak, to be able to offer the same types of mortgage products as any bank, for that matter.
Got it.
So it's just a lack of competition, really.
Going back to Big Red for the second time.
Let's keep going.
So this is just a Scotia conversation. Is that... So they're very aggressive right now in going after mortgage business, correct?
Yeah, 180 from last year.
Exactly. So is that, in your mind, market specific or business specific? Is that something that, meaning, does that have to do with internal Scotia dynamics, or does that have to do with them saying, actually, okay, right now we're feeling very confident about Canadian real estate and we want more, a bigger piece of the pie?
Both for sure. So the first one is, like any bank, and I remind this to my mortgage clients every single day, what do they want? All your business. What do they want to do? Make as much money off you as possible. Why wouldn't they? They're all companies. So, you know, people say, oh, I love my bank. I trust them. Okay, well, sure. I trust that they're going to sell you as much as they can. Well, like every bank, Scotiabank looked at it and said, well, we have all these mortgages, but that's all we have. And in some cases, they're loss leaders. Like they don't make as much money as they would on selling you a line of credit or a credit card or another account and get account fees and so forth, right? And so they changed their terms and put it in line with most other banks where they say, hey, we'll offer you these great products and solutions and have awesome policies, but we'll offer you even better if you sign up an account with us, which has been pretty standard with most banks for a long time, but Scotia wasn't doing that. So they changed their policy to offer more competitive terms by saying, hey, you got to sign up an account with us, therefore being able to sell you more products, which they've showed us stats on that. It's working. Like consumers are okay with that. They're jumping on board. We'll take that discount in exchange for, yeah, we'll give you our banking business and so forth. I mean, people kind of jump around, right? And the second thing is, and this is something that I say is maybe not general knowledge, is that they feel confident about the future of the real estate market. Like, there was a lot of uncertainty in 2022 going into 2023 with rates going up so quickly. When does it end? Are consumers going to be delinquent? Now they look at this and say, yeah, there's some delinquencies, but it's still less than it was in even 2019. Even to this day with them going up, I think we can withstand that. We have well-qualified AAA borrowers. Yeah, let's get some more of that market share. Let's take that on. And so I think it's a combo effect.
What about in terms of you're uniquely positioned as are a lot of mortgage specialists where you're seeing who's kind of coming in, getting pre-approved. Which groups are creating the most activity? Is it like, are you seeing investors? Is it first-time home buyers or people trying to move up the property ladder? Like who's getting mortgages right now?
So again, just by the way I market myself as someone who educates consumers, I think like for a long time, I was getting, at least the last couple of years, I was getting a lot more people who were investing in their first property or second property. And this was like kind of 2021, 2022. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got a little bit of everybody, but that was what we saw a lot in 21, 2022. 23 was just a mishmash of people, right? Like it was a slower year. We were seeing a lot of repeat customers, random things. 2024 has been so uniquely different already. I mean, we're talking only a few months into the year and I have worked with more first-time buyers so far in just a couple of months than I did for 6 months of last year. And my feedback there is there's that confidence back in the marketplace. First-time buyers now are seeing things from a different perspective because they didn't really have that 1% rate or 1.5% rate. Yeah, they saw it. It was a couple of years ago, but they don't
have the context. It's not a new normal. It's just normal.
Yeah. And then, I mean, everybody's parents were saying like, don't buy this year because in 2023, because rates are high and so forth. And now I think it's just like, it's like this built up like combustion where they're saying, okay, well, the prices, I'm watching MLS for the last 6 months and the prices aren't really going down in most places anymore, at least not much. Now, maybe it's a good time to get back in. And I think just generally speaking, you kind of have this period of time of a lull and people jump back in. So first time buyers without experience, hands down, number one group of people I'm seeing. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just while you're talking about first-time home buyers, I've noticed a lot of first-time home buyers reaching out. And there's also seems to be a fear that if rates do get cut, it's just going to be a frenzy. And I think it's the parents who are saying, or who are kind of helping them reach that decision. And I've just had a few conversations this week. So it's like that, what's coming for, you know, the second half of the year and can we get in front of it?
What's most interesting to me is you're right. They don't watch your global or CTV news or anything like that. So they're watching Instagram and TikTok. A lot of the people that are reaching out as first-time buyers, it's a combination of referrals, but a lot of them are coming off of social media and reaching out to me. Like they've been watching my social for 3, 6, 12 months, this sort of thing. And they're like, you know what? I've been watching. You give a lot of information, data. I feel good. I feel well-equipped. I feel good about the market. And I've seen all this data. So I think what I'm noticing is a lot of these people are getting information from all these different sources than, you know, we may have in the past, and they're moving quicker. So they're thinking, you know what? I can see what's coming. I've done my own research. I believe that this is a good time to buy. Plus, their parents are actually, believe it or not, saying that too.
It seems so counterintuitive.
It's funny because
like risk averse parents, but they've seen it happen.
They've seen what happens
continuously,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off. Go on. No. Number two.
The second one is there's two that are kind of behind that. Renewals. I know we're going to talk about that at a later time. But people coming back to the investment piece, which is why we're having this conversation right now. So getting back into real estate investing as a conversation. Last year, it was a dirty word. People were selling off rental properties left, right, and center because of rates going up, you know, concern over bad tenants. All the negativity around it just pushed everybody away. And there was very few people that were like, hey, I'd like to dip my toes back in that water. And they're coming back. Like, I've got multiple clients now either pre-approved or getting pre-approved or just acquiring either their first or second investment property. And this conversation is coming up daily right now. Last year, it was probably weekly, which was again, in 21, 22, it was daily. So it's really shifted back in favor of that.
So more investor activity in
It has increased.
World.
Again, not to 21, 22 numbers, but definitely substantially more than in 23.
Does that, and maybe how to frame this, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of the wisdom of the marketplace and investors seem to be coming back into the market. Should they be active right now in your mind? And why, if so?
Yeah.
Because presumably they should be.
Yeah. One more point really quickly. You might find this interesting. So we talked about first-time buyers and investors. One of my team members brought this up the other week. They said to me, they said, Alex, I've never seen so many first-time buyers that want to invest and they don't even own a home. And he was right. I brought this up. I was like, yeah, we got this guy, this girl, this person, no, guys and girls too, which I love. I don't want it to just be all guys, but, and they're buying their first property as an investment property, which I found to be really unique. Now I forgot your question.
Investors coming back into the market. Should they be active right now, spring 2024?
The question is, do you believe that you should be active? It's probably a better question. And we talked about this on ChatGPT, looking at our appreciation numbers for the last little while. Gents, how do you feel about the marketplace? Hey, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I just got an offer accepted on a property. I won't give you all the details because it's not removing subjects yet. But I believe in the marketplace right now. You know, of course, I could be overpaying, I could be wrong, but my intentions and my plan is always long term, and I'd like to own as much as possible land. That's my primary focus. You know, a house, something with some land available on it. That's my thoughts on the market. So if I'm putting my money where my mouth is, I guess the answer to that question is yes. I do believe it is a good time, but I also thought it was a good time back in the fall. It's just that I think that right now it's kind of amplified because there's this race to beating the so-called, you know, market right now because rates haven't, well, the Bank of Canada hasn't dropped rates. And so we haven't seen that quote unquote frenzy. So if we're thinking that we're going to see that appreciation game happen, I still think that we haven't even touched the tip of that iceberg, if you speak.
Yeah, I always think of market sentiment as the two things that always have stood out to me is one is Cameron McNeil brought up on our show right now. Are people liquidating? Do you look around Are people selling their real estate? Are developers selling their land holdings? And if the answer is no, there seems to be a confidence in the market, right? And price appreciation. And the second one is, do you think real estate is going to be more or less expensive in a decade from now?
I had a call with a guy just a few days ago, just finished his schooling, just got his job about 6 months ago. He says to me, I always ask the question, like, what's prompting you now? Like, why now? Why is this important to you? He's like, Alex, I want to be real with you. And this is him saying like this. I wrote it down. I was like, this is gold. He's like, Alex, 5 years ago, before I went to school, my friend bought a property and he said, you should buy one too right now. And someone told me, I don't know who, but he said, someone told me, no, it's not a good time in the market. I guess this was probably 2017, 2018, somewhere in that ballpark.
Gym teacher in Coquitlam? Anyway, go on.
Somebody said, hey, don't buy now. It's a bad time. Prices are going up. You know, it's going to come back down. Maybe this was 2019. And he said, Alex, I'm not making that mistake again. I see the market. I know what's happening. I see what's going on. I'm buying right now. I don't care what it is. He's like, I don't care if it's a $350,000 condo. I'm getting into the market because I don't want to have any regrets in 5 years. I loved to hear that from me not saying a single word from him because this was somebody else saying, first time getting into the market. Like, I just can't see this happening to me again.
Who's your gym teacher in Coquitlam? What are you talking about?
That is the guy who runs a Facebook group.
Oh,
is he the same guy that posted my YouTube?
I thought he was a retired gym teacher.
Oh, he might be. I think it's Chilliwack.
Is he the Vancouver crash real estate guy?
Yeah.
I got to get these guys posting on my YouTube channel right now, and apparently everybody actually knows who these people are.
Like, yeah,
why,
yeah.
Who's this guy? Yeah. Seems angry.
He'll be posting on this maybe as well.
He made you run a long time, didn't he?
Yeah. Okay. So this is interesting. I'm thinking in terms of what's ahead. Okay. So it seems like pretty clear. Everybody here thinks it's a great time because you get ahead of the rate drops and when there's more competition on the buy side. What about mass renewals? Like, we're hitting a renewal wall 2024, 2025, I think, is even more renewals. What does this look like for the average Canadian homeowner? And does that lead to deals in your mind? Is this a crisis? Is it a buying opportunity for investors or a nothing burger?
I think there's a few things, and we got to go back on afterwards. The mortgage renewal, quote unquote, crisis is, there is a real consideration here, right? There's people that are going to be increasing their monthly payments based on the fact that interest rates are going higher than they were. But we also forget that the people that are renewing now got their home in 2019. In 2019, they probably bought it for less. And in many circumstances, the rates at that time were actually around the 3.5% range.
Right.
So if you think about most of those folks, if they took a 25-year mortgage at that time, if they've made their payments at this time right now, 5 years later, seen a pretty significant appreciation growth. Now looking at it, a vast majority of these people can re-amortize or restretch their loan over 30 years if they want to, and probably see as little as a 10% difference in their monthly payments, and sometimes even less based on the clients that I've gone with. The challenge that comes in is there are unfortunately some people who aren't getting advice or looking at options and or taking on a significant amount of debt during that time for one reason or another. And there are some people that are going to get caught up in that. But the delinquencies that are being reported based on the people being unable to make payments or renewals coming up, the thing about that, if we're getting into that conversation, because it's been on the news a lot lately, 130% increase in delinquencies. Well, if we're talking about, you know, going from 8,000 or, you know, 6,000 to 10,000 delinquencies in the entire country. Like, let's put this in context. It's like 0.0018% of mortgage holders are going delinquent, not 50% like the news has reported. It's a 50% increase, or, you know, I can't remember the numbers. I don't have them in front of me right now.
But I'll ask ChatGPT.
Yeah. So it's not a nothing burger. It's a real thing, but we can withstand it because the vast majority of people have made more money also in that time as well.
So no deals.
There's a couple deals kicking in. And there's definitely going to be some opportunities, no doubt about that. We've seen a few more foreclosures, but I think that's more of a nature of the market turning over.
Yeah, it's funny, but we've talked about this a little bit, but there seems to be more opportunity for, you know, foreclosures. I think the big thing right now, and this kind of is thinking more broadly about the market right now. Like the opportunity really is you're not competing for real estate in some cases, right? Like it's an easier go for buyers, but that also transfers onto foreclosures right now, where even in hot markets, foreclosures, you know, you've got a courtroom full of people that know the accepted offer price that are willing to bid it to a closer to market value. Where now I feel like if you're willing to do the legwork, you can actually get some deals. Or if you're the only offer in on offer day, if people are waiting on offers, you know, there might be an opportunity, right? So
I think to your point, the difference right now is just compared to like the last 3 years or 2 years, where just virtually anything and everything sold because there was such limited supply. Now we see more supply come back on. So if you are the person that's willing to put the legwork in, you can put in that sweat equity to be able to find a piece of real estate that you could get at a value pricing. Then what's interesting to me is I've seen that most properties right now in a lot of different cities across the country that I've looked at, with a few exceptions, are kind of selling for what you'd think they'd sell for. They're not selling for crazy, even if there's multiples. They're not selling for, you know, 100,000 more in most situations, some obviously. And
that's exactly it, right? You see 8 offers and it's like, oh, it sold for $3,000 more than what we were expecting it to or something. Yeah. It's not like, holy, you know, they hit it out of the park.
Yeah. So. And where you can get value right now as an investor, in my opinion, is doing the dirty work, like you mentioned. So whether it is finally foreclosure, but, you know, private sales, there's people that are like, okay, it's not a bad market anymore. I'm happy to sell it to. And I'm seeing a lot of private sales right now between neighbors and friends and family and much more than I had seen historically. And they're getting value out of this because those people that are selling are like, I don't want to deal with the real estate agent. I don't want to deal with the market. And I just want to sell it. And I know I'm getting decent value. So they're certainly paying less than market. That could be a unique opportunity for people who are putting the legwork, knocking on doors and trying to see if they can buy a property on their own, right?
Yeah. And I also would say that it seems right now, I mean, it's interesting to know that investors at least are reaching out to you. Some of our investors are kind of coming back into the market, but I find still it's predominantly end users out looking right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's ever more of a reason to own tier one properties, right? I mean, right now where I am seeing, like where I saw close to 100K over asking last week on something that, you know, arguably shouldn't have gone there.
Yeah, the market that it seemed to support it.
It was a tier one end user product, right?
Mm.
So, I mean, just as a side note, if you're thinking about the type of real estate to buy and hold in the lower mainland,
the stuff that's sitting right now is definitely tier two and tier three properties.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Hey, some interesting things to talk about here for you guys too, just from back to like what to buy and where to buy it, because I know people like to know specific things. And so some interesting stats, Capital Economics expected rent inflation for 2024 across the country to go up by 5.7% first and foremost. So if we're thinking about the increase in rental costs. The second thing is, obviously inflation itself is expected to go down to around the 2% range, assuming things go according to plan right now. Real estate values may go up over that time. But if we think about that, again, there's this odd mindset for people that rent is what, because I'm getting this rent right now, that's all I'll get forever. So we need to remind people that rental rates continue to go up over time. I mean, a property that I rented 2 years ago for $1,800 is now rented out today for $2,300. That's a pretty significant amount. And that more than covers my difference in mortgage payment. Plus, I mean, if this person moves out in 2 or 3 years, I imagine that's probably going to go closer to $2,600, $2,800. So the long game. The second thing, and I kind of want to go back to what I did, I'm trying to do right now is buy a single family home. There's two things on that point. Number one, how often are you seeing like accessible single family homes built or around us right now? None. Where they're making it all multifamily, multi-unit properties. But what do people want to live in typically as much as possible?
Single family. Yeah.
Single family homes. And so that is a hot ticket if you wanted to, a rental property right now from that perspective, assuming that's something that you're interested in. And I mean, what is one of the biggest things that we're seeing, and I'm pretty sure a lot of our listeners know this in the US, is national corporations, I won't name
buying
names
up
today,
all the homes.
They're buying up towns, cities,
yeah,
like college towns everywhere specifically for single family homes and completely taking. So if we got multi-billion, trillion-dollar corporations buying single family homes, what does that say? They know a lot more than I do.
The Sun Belt and the Rust Belt. It's hard to imagine people even owning detached houses in a decade. Like it's wild. It's wild at the pace that houses are getting bought up. But
no question. Moreover, I mean, you guys talk to developers much more than I do on my side, but they're not building at the rate that they were pre, and probably won't be for a couple of years. We've got this whole immigration thing, which although it'll slow down, it's not stopping. So just do the math. Like, I don't need to sell it to anybody, but I mean, I sold myself on it basically.
Yeah. Yeah. What geographically, where are you looking? We're not asking for the street.
We're not asking for the neighborhood.
We're not asking for the five street digits.
Yeah.
74625 A Street. Sorry. That was a Vancouver-centric comment. But are you out in the valley?
No.
Is the question.
No. I think there were three areas that I was looking. One was in Alberta.
Okay.
The second was Okanagan. Third was Vancouver Island. Pre-Christmas, nice. I was looking in the valley in Chilliwack and so forth. But spreading my wings, if you will, right?
I got to say, I think the Okanagan is a pretty good deal right now. Is that where you landed? Maybe, yes, you. Maybe. Yes, you did. And can I? Are you Kelowna, Penticton? Where can you give us the
town?
Yeah,
no, I'm fine. We're looking at a property in Penticton. I feel after everything that's gone on in the last 6 months with regards to the regulations, the guidelines, and just reading between the lines, I feel like Penticton is a city that's on the growth path. I also believe that they're more favorable towards short-term rentals or just investing in general. Like just generally speaking, they seem to be much more favorable around that. And the properties seem significantly undervalued for a city that's primed to have a good amount of population growth, especially for the middle-aged family that looks for something close to the city, but they don't want to be in the hustle of Kelowna. They're only 45 minutes away. So
such a beautiful spot too.
The value is good there too. I mean, rent is strong, maybe not as strong as Kelowna from that perspective, but there's certainly value. So, you know, could I have invested and found other properties or other cities with the same, value? Probably, but
smart move.
You got to make a decision, right? So
I think it's a good one.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Maybe thinking about, I think we've established it's a good time to be thinking about investing in real estate. Alex, what are some of your top tips when it comes to financing for investors?
Yeah. So first thing from a financing perspective is probably a mindset piece for most people. I mean,
oh, smart. Yeah.
It's kind of back to our previous conversation again. Well, we talked about it. Number one, get around the idea that this debt is a tool. It's for good. The second thing is, what is the biggest concern people have around it? Isn't anything to do with finance. It's actually the physical process and or finding a good tenant or having bad stories around that. So use people around you as resources. There's so many people out there that can help you, and they're not going to charge you anything. Like, listen to every piece of content you guys provide, your guests. There's Facebook groups. There's so much out there that where people can help you. But back on the finance part, number one, you got to work with somebody who owns investment properties. Hands down, if it's not me, that's fine. But you got to know that whoever it is you're working with on the real estate side and on the investment side, on the real estate side and the finance side, they have experience with investment properties, because there's something that they're probably doing for their own properties that you need to take advantage of. Number three is, you know, so just basic step, use the longest amortization you can get. You know, that's obviously pretty important.
And can you just spell out why?
Yeah. So this applies for your primary residence as well. Speaking of renewals and so forth. So where a lot of people get confused is, hey, I want to pay off my mortgage in 25 years. But what it's about is actually using the lowest possible monthly payment, both on your investment property and on your primary residence, because the higher your monthly payment is, the less you can qualify for. And obviously when it comes to your rental property, it reduces the amount of potential cash flow or money that you can make off that. Again, we're using this debt as the opportunity for us to borrow something. We don't need to be paying as much out of our own pocket. So amortization schedules are something that are misunderstood. And as a home buyer, if you're renewing or refinancing right now, I tell people, like, hey, is there any possibility, even any chance remotely, that you might buy a second home in the next 3 to 5 years? Because if so, let's get that back out. You can use the ability to pay lump sums on your primary mortgage to pay it down faster, if that's mm-hmm. what you want to do. I mean, we're not going to get into the Smith maneuver here today, but there's a lot of strategies from that perspective. This allows you to keep your own cash flow down. If your renter leaves for a month or 2 months and you got to put some money out of pocket, at least you're not struggling financially to make those payments. So that would be another one. Another thing is, like we talked about in the beginning, like the first thing that people look about when it comes to, the only thing people understand is, like, there's a rate and there's a bank, right? And out of the list of, like, the 10 most important things, your rate's probably number five. Like, it's important because you're paying that money, but it's probably number five on that list. I just got myself approved with a higher interest rate than I could have because of the particulars of this program. And this may be different for each person, so I'm not going to get into specifics of mine, but you need to be looking beyond that, because we're not trying to make $500 a year here. We're trying to do something a little bit bigger than that, right? In most situations, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Do you have a home equity line of credit or a line of credit? Is that an option? That should be something that people would be looking at. And really, really, really important, and this is why obviously we advocate for working with a broker. The difference of on the broker world is, we look at it and say, okay, so if I place your mortgage with Bank A, what is the impact of that on being able to go to Bank B later if you have another property that you're buying? It's kind of like we have a certain number of bullets in the gun, and we like to move them around and distribute them based on what your potential plan could be, even if you don't accomplish that. And that could mean better options for you for your next property or your refinance on your home.
Right. Makes sense. What kind of, and this is a question we get all the time, but you know, when I think about mortgages, you think about, like, does it have a HELOC attached to it potentially, or is it portable, or what, you know, what percentage can I pay down if I want to, or if I come into money? But, like, what are the other product features that people should typically understand?
Well, I mean, you nailed a few of the big ones right off the bat, right? Yeah. So how does the home equity line of credit actually work?
Yep.
Can I break it into multiple components? And if I do that, what does that look like? Do I have the ability to increase my line of credit if my property value goes up later? What is the actual process to doing that? An important consideration. So it's not just the product, but is, how does that product actually work for me? I mentioned this before, like how does this lender actually use their rental calculations? Which again, people don't get it, need to get into the weeds of it because it does change as time goes on. But when we think about that next home or our primary residence, the lender that we pick could be impacted based on those rental policies. So yeah, you're buying a rental, but your primary residence might come up in a couple of years. And so are we going to have options to be able to go somewhere else or not? What's my flexibility, as you mentioned, on prepaying it? But here's the biggest thing that nobody thinks about. We talked about this previously, and it's not sexy at all. Mortgage breakup fees. What are my penalties? That is going to be one of the most big topics, I promise you, in a year and a half or 2 years, if interest rates go down by 1.5%, 2%, the number one complaint is going to be my mortgage penalty to exit.
So many people we talk to have investment properties on variable mortgages right now, right? Here's the question. Now, tend and extend, is that the goal at this point? Like what strategically are you telling people if they have to, you know, if they have to either bump their payment up or they don't have to at this point, but they're thinking maybe I should, I got a 60 year AM, 70 year AM, whatever the AM is.
100, let's go infinity or beyond, right?
So is it literally pretend like, okay, go out as far as you can and weather the storm and keep your payments low? Or what are you telling people right now?
I mean, you got to ask yourself questions in your personal comfort level and what you're trying to do there. I mean, I'm variable.
I'm one hundo.
You know, 90% of the brokers you'll talk to are probably variable, for good or for bad, man. And we're on infinity or beyond. So what I've opted to do is to keep my payments as they are, as long as we possibly can, because it gives us the ability to pay down lump sums and keep our payments as long as or as low as possible. Because Remember, again, that bank that's acquiring your new mortgage could care less if you're paying off principal or interest. They care, what is your monthly obligation? So if your monthly obligation or your monthly payment is low, then you have the ability to take on more debt because it's all debt to income and it's all monthly. And that's the only thing that it's not the only thing, but it's one of the biggest things that they consider. So in this situation, leave your payments as they are. If you'd like to pay it down, which most people would, pay lump sums. Invest your money somewhere else, take it out, and then pay lump sums as much as you can. This gives you the kind of the flexibility of both worlds. And then obviously we hope and we pray to the real estate gods such as, you know, Tiff to give us a little bit of relief in the next year here, which would be all right.
So sounds like that's one common mistake.
Biggest one. Just had this come up the other day.
Because yeah, I was going to say like, okay, so we've talked about tips for investors, you know, the positives that you can do. Yep. What do you see? Because I'm sure this is daily where somebody goes, hey, here's my goals. Here's what I did. I just took out a car loan. I did X, Y, Z. And you're like, man, you've done every negative that you could possibly do. Like what should people avoid 100% if they're looking to invest in real estate and
short-term grow their mindset portfolio on anything, right? So thinking about things based on what's happening right today, that's a common thing. So, you know, people, and again, I let's just be really blunt. Like people will often disregard 80% of the different things we talked about just to get the quote unquote cheapest rate, not thinking about the fact that things are going to change in the next 2, 3, or 4 years. So those costs or fees or penalties, increasing their payments and the impact of obviously being able to borrow.
That's
more money.
Such just to double down on that, like that's such a something that we don't talk about that much. It's like those monthly payments and how that impacts your borrowing power.
Massive. Yeah. The impact, this is probably more of just an understanding of what the options are, but the impact of taking on money in different types of debts. So for example, and that HELOC thing. So some banks, most banks actually, what they'll do is they'll look at how much money that you have available in a HELOC and they'll say, okay, well, that's all a debt to us. And so for that reason, we're going to add a monthly payment obligation and you can now qualify for less money because they look at it that way. So not thinking about that when you're planning which lender you're going to go with next time is a real consideration. So the only thing you can really do there is just work with somebody who understands that or find out yourself if you want to do some digging. You can do, there's only a couple of banks that will look at it from that perspective. I would say the biggest mistakes that I see are just basically people don't think about my cost to exit. They only think about the rate piece as a primary consideration. They're not thinking about the impact of what happens if I want to buy another property after this and how that could look. They forget that values change and I might want to do this again. So I might want to set up like the HELOC or this sort of thing. It just comes down to kind of a short-term mindset. You know what I mean? And that's the biggest thing that people can look at is, okay, what's that long-term obligation? Mistake that people make otherwise too is not having a plan when they're signing or buying investments or just primary properties with friends and family. So having multiple cosigners on title and what the impact of having different cosigners on title of a property will be, because a lot of banks will say, well, you got Bob on that home. And so Bob's not coming on this one. So we're only going to use half the rent, but we're going to, you know, we're going to show that you have all the liability, because if Bob goes AWOL, you still have to pay that. And a lot of people don't think about that when they're buying that investment property. Like, oh, well, Bob brought $50,000 of cash. Well, what if you could buy that property without Bob on title and you guys could work out a joint venture agreement, right?
Hmm. Good stuff. As a final question for you here, Alex, what is the play in 2024? We're talking and timestamp this, and it's going out, you know, basically today, but we're early March. We just had the Bank of Canada, and we didn't even talk about this, but yeah. I think it was kind of expected, right? The Bank of Canada held firm. The only thing that struck me about some of the commentary around where we're at with the data is that, you know, it seems like everybody's betting on June or July, and now some people are talking September. It's like this waiting, what's that play, waiting for Godot or whatever moment where it's like, when are rates coming down? We might be further out than we think. Regardless of that, offline we were talking about 5-year fixed. You know, obviously I don't feel like anyone's really talking about variable, but maybe I'm off on that. What's a play right now for the type of mortgage an investor should be buying?
There's a couple. I mean, we always talked about your personal plan being the biggest consideration here, but you have to ask yourself the whole risk versus reward consideration. Like, are you more conservative or more aggressive? Right now, based on yesterday's feedback from TIFF, which I was talking on the drive here, and you know, I said to the person I was talking to, I've never seen things change data-wise as fast as they are right now.
Right.
So it's like, it's a moving target. So all we can do is look at what's the data say today and what's my plan, and then what's my comfort level if things go opposite to plan. And just go with it. You know what I mean? Like, the data today is actually advantageous for now a 3-year term compared to, let's say, a variable. But that depends on the rates, your comfort level with the market shifting, you know, obviously your cash flow considerations too. Because right now, an uninsured 30-year variable rate might be sitting at, say, 6.7% based on prime at 7.2 compared to I don't want to quote this because it changes literally daily, but let's say a fixed 3-year fixed between 5.25% and 5.5%. That's a pretty big spread. You know, we got 1.25%. So if we were to push forward and look at the simulations, it works out in favor today based on TIFF and being a little more negative about where the market's going. It works out in favor of that 3-year fixed rate. I mean, basically what he said yesterday was more or less like, we're going to go down slow. We are going to go down slow. And he stated that, maybe not in those certain terms, but more or less said, hey, we went up fast, we're going to go down slow, and you can expect that. And I think the market has taken a little bit of a slightly different stance here and said, you know what, okay, so maybe then that's the way the market moves here. And so I would just practice patience and continue to follow through. But if you're buying a home today, you're probably closing in 30, 60, 90 days, right? So we still have a few more weeks to consider what that looks like as things evolve. That being said, you know, pick a plan, stick with whatever that plan is. And it's so subjective to an individual. So we don't want to say like, do this or don't do this. But if you're just asking, what's the math say today? That's what the math says.
What about fixed rate? If you want to play the variable game, if you're, what's the opposite of risk averse? Excited by, you know, the potential declines.
Opportunistic.
Opportunistic, I guess, would be the word. Yeah. What are we thinking in terms of, do you do fixed rate? What's a strategy?
So when
there?
People are taking a variable rate, they often forget there's those two different types. There's the ARM, which is an adjustable rate where it goes up or down based on rates,
right?
And then there's the fixed payment variable, which is typically called a VRM, even though they're all variables. Super confusing, I know. Who named this stuff? Like, why don't we just call this the flexible variable, and this is the stuck variable or the frozen one, right? What an investor would probably want to align themselves with is an adjustable rate where it just automatically floats down as the market shifts. There's only one of the large banks that has that, and the other ones have these fixed payments. Now, most of the fixed payment banks that I know of, I don't know of every policy, telling you that right now, but some of them will allow you to, you know, if the rate goes down, call in and ask them to readjust, assuming you qualify, to have the lower payment. So that could be an option, but it's more of an annoyance. So I would suggest that most people are going to be looking for that ARM, that floating rate product, if they're going to go variable right now.
And if you're going variable right now, the assumption is you're betting on rates going down.
You're betting on that decline.
On the interest rates going down. And then you're betting on the fact that today's your highest you're ever going to be paying on that.
100%. And the other factor is, remember, we talked about prepayment breakup penalties, right? So like, what happens if you get a prime minus 50 today, and what if TIFF's wrong and we see some kind of event occur, we do hit a recession,
yeah,
and rates start to bomb quickly, and all of a sudden we're like, okay, well, this is awesome. Then often what happens is the discounts get better with the banks, right? So we might see a prime minus one all of a sudden. Well, if you're in that variable rate mortgage, you pay 3 months of interest. It might make sense for you to do that and get back to that prime minus one option instead of prime minus 50, as an example. So it just creates more options for you, creates more flexibility. Maybe we do see a spike in real estate in the next 12 months. Well, you might just say, hey, I want to get access to that additional equity. I'm just going to refi to do that. Well, if rates go down by 1%, with most of these three-year fixed mortgage rates, you know, on a $400,000 or $500,000 loan, you got a $25,000 penalty to break that thing, yeah, right? We saw that a ton in 21, 20, 22. But if you go variable, you have that benefit of 3 months interest based on the rate that you're paying at that time. So it's just flexibility is the game too. It's not, that's why I say it's not just about what's that rate, right? There's the other factors.
Good stuff. Maybe we'll leave it there, Alex. We do have this segment called the Five Wire. You've done it before. You've done it recently, but maybe things have changed. Do you have a minute to stick around for that?
Let's go.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect five-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more. One book you've read recently that you recommend?
Yeah, so the one I'm reading right now is called Rocket Fuel, and it is by, I think, Gene Wickman. It's about companies growing, and there's that we call a visionary, and we got the integrator. The visionary is the guy's got the big ideas and life's getting out there, and then you got the integrator who comes up with like little details, structures, processes. One guess at what I am?
I would say you're an integrator.
Heck no.
Really?
Not even close. I like that's like my...
That's your Achilles heel?
No, I wouldn't say Achilles heel, but it's just not what I enjoy, right? They think about what you like doing.
Oh, see, okay. See, if I would say you're an ideas guy, but what I'm struck by is how consistent, like you are a systems guy in my
structure
mind.
Structure sets you free, man.
Exactly. So that's what I meant by that. Yeah.
Hardest thing on earth for me to do, but it's the best thing for me. So I have to do it to make sure I have success, because otherwise I got 433 emails going out every day with ideas of things I want to do, right? So. Yes, that's the book I'm reading. And anybody who runs a small business, wants to run a small business or an entrepreneur needs to read that if they want to learn about who they are and how to scale up, even if they want to scale to five people, right?
Yeah.
Just anything.
Structure sets you free.
Yeah.
Right on. In the last 5 years, and this is a good one for you, but we've had you on recently. So let's say last couple of months, new belief, behavior, or habit that has most improved your life.
What's new? I mean, man, that last episode, we got so deep into mindset and belief. So what's changed?
Being more vulnerable.
You know what? I posted this recently on my Instagram. So anybody who follows my Instagram saw this, and I believe in this, is that it's a hard thing to live by, which is that if you have a choice in doing something, it's either, if it's not a hell yes, or can I swear?
Yeah.
If it's not a fuck yeah, then it's probably a no in almost all situations. Assuming you have the information to make a decision, it's either a fuck yeah or it's a no. Make a decision as soon as you can. It doesn't mean you can't take a few days on a massive decision, right? Something impactful. But I've been thinking about, I heard that recently and it resonated with me. I thought about that and it's helped me make some massive changes really quickly. And it's funny because my wife's been saying that to me lately. Is it a hell yes or not?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on it. She uses it against me sometimes, but that's another story.
Hey, that's great. I know you're not big on doing anything but the grind. Binge watching your favorite movie lately? Something you've seen lately?
No. I mean, I've watched a couple shows when I find a chance to do so. I just watched Oppenheimer. That was crazy.
Oh yeah,
that was incredible. Like, I got a little bit lost.
I was gonna say the only thing about it is I felt like I saw it. I feel like I don't think I've ever talked about this publicly. I saw it at the theater in Metrotown, which Metrotown is like going back to the 1990s in terms of how crappy that theater is.
Yeah.
And it was sold out. And I got put between me and my wife, put between two fairly large single guys that were there. And it just it was like, why am I here? And it's 4 hours long or something.
Longest movie ever. And I watched on two airplane rides.
So. Yeah, I was going to say. And then it's almost two separate movies.
Yeah.
That's it. It was like, wow, that was a great, you know, the politics of the second half. It was like, a little disjointed, but I feel like I would have liked it more had I not been in a situation that I was like, how on earth did I pay for this? Like, this is torture.
I feel for you because I was on the plane watching it and I had that experience. So if you had to pay for that,
no,
I'm sorry for you, man. That's rough. That, and actually for anybody who's into this stuff, like watch that Masters of Air, the new war, World War II show that's kind of along the same veins of, or same producers as like Band of Brothers and Pacific. Totally different feel to it, but yeah, I think it's pretty good. It gets better as it moves on.
Right on. Yeah. What are you listening to music-wise?
What am I listening to lately? I got to look at my Spotify playlist. Man, I'm always listening to something different right now. There's actually a local Vancouver artist that I've put on. I just found out he was from Vancouver, and I just have him on the background. So hopefully he likes the streams he's getting. Vandalux. He's like some kind of like house. It's perfect for just zoning out. So yeah. I think that's a compliment to him. It's good. It sounds good. It's in the background. You're getting a lot of streams from me, my man. I hope they're paying you those 0.00001 cents. I would say that's probably getting the most on my list right now.
Fantastic. And last but not least, something you have purchased for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life.
Lately. Well, I just, you know, the house thing, I guess, is more than $1,500.
Yeah. But that's exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Something that I paid for less than $1,500. Man, my flight to Arizona. I went to that conference there. Just I was telling you about this last week, and
yeah,
found some flights to Scotts. Obviously, the trip cost me more, but whatever. You can go do it on the cheap if you want to. Got a chance to hang out with 75 people that were like way more smart, way more intelligent than I am. That are doing bigger things than I am. That are super positive. And I would say you could probably find something like that for less than $1,500. It doesn't have to be in Arizona. And it was all about like, just being better. That was pretty cool.
This is something that I feel like you do that is, you hear about how powerful it is. I do less of it, but I should do more, is like being part of communities, you know, surrounding yourself with like-minded individuals and actually taking that energy to make those trips and seeing the benefit.
It's the hands down, one of the best things I've ever done for my life is to do that. And the cool thing is like, well, I had to pay up front for it and it's in the calendar. It's locked. You know, I can obviously choose to go or not go. And it can be tough on business sometimes to make it work. But like every time I go, I come back like recharged mentally, you know, more invigorated. But more importantly, like most of these things are like international Canada, US. So you get to meet people all over the place and just understand things from a different point of view. And I think the biggest takeaway for me is just hearing the way that different people think and implementing that into my thought processes, or at least considering it.
Right.
Because, you know, in Vancouver and in different areas, we're so isolated, even with social media. I mean, like we see what's around us. They feed us what's around us. Like I get to meet people from Detroit and Florida and you know, other Alaska, Hawaii, yeah, and all these different places. And like, just all these people have the same mindset, but they take a different approach to get there. And there's just so much to learn from different people that you can't get online.
I feel like, you know, at least real estate and presumably most industries, but in Vancouver, it's a copycat industry, right? Everybody's kind of looking at each other. And once you see somebody doing something that's successful, it's like, it's a pile on, but you're not seeing what's working in Florida, what's working in, you know, whatever, any other markets, which is super powerful.
There's a mortgage conference coming up in a few, I didn't even know about it in April. And it's like, are you going? And I'm like, I don't know. I really want to go to that. Cause like, I'm like fired up from this other stuff. And anyways, I think like what I would say to anybody listening to this, everybody listening to this podcast is like, just commit to something for yourself. The best money I ever spent always was on some type of personal development, because that always leveled me up personally, professionally, emotionally, physically, all these types of, whether it be a trainer, a coach, going to an event, like whatever you can afford, find a mentor or something like that, man. Cause that is always go so far.
I'm liking it, man. Thank you very much. How can people find out more about Flow Mortgages? I'm sure you're everywhere on social media, but
I mean, just type my name. I just got to spell it right into Google, Alex McFadden. You'll see me everywhere. Yeah. My feedback is, if people really want to follow my journey on a personal level, they should follow the Mortgage Pug on Instagram. Like that's where I live and die daily. My company is Flow Mortgage Co. You find us on YouTube. We post every single week. We have a podcast different than yours, but you know, we talk about money and real estate on a regular basis, have some pretty cool guests on there. I would just, my biggest piece of feedback is if you listen to this, if you found value, if I helped you, just send me a message and let me know, because I just love the idea of being able to impact people. So thank you for letting me do that.
Hey, thanks for coming back on.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
So So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Alex McFadden, the mortgage pug at Flow Mortgages.
Yeah, Alex McFadden. Great having him in studio. Love Alex's energy. Super bright guy. Can talk about anything.
You know what?
We covered a lot.
And we did. And what I liked about the tips and strategies, of course, it's funny how he goes back to mindset.
Yeah.
And it's a very useful reminder. Like I was thinking he was going to be talking about, you know, car loans and things like that. He was talking about mindset as a strategically imperative to be successful in the real estate game, which I loved.
The more successful you get, the more you realize mindset plays an integral role in all of it.
Exactly. And he is a successful guy. That is for sure. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer with different types of stats. If you're interested in submarkets, we got unique stats for that. Deal of the month, VIP presale access. We also have, of course, tried and true, private client services.
And Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still where the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com/buy with us, or just click buy with us.
Just click that button.
Yeah,
exactly. Smash it.
Super easy to sign up. And this is really, I think, again, great time to be setting up a PCS account because you get the sold prices, you get the days on market. And right now we are in a transitioning market. It's getting busy. It's still spotty, a little spotty in certain areas. In certain price bands, but you're going to be able to monitor. If you want to set it up for your specific neighborhood where you currently own real estate or where you have revenue properties, we can help you with that as well. We can do a map search just so you see what your neighbors are selling for, which is also fantastic.
Yeah, just the neighbors. That's right. That's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, Adam, try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we have the Kokomo line info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week and we're back next week with another exciting episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.